Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is July 7, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I hope you had a wonderful July 4th weekend. I did. I'll tell you about it in a second. I'm going to be in Zurich, then the Rhone Valley, then Lake Constance, and then back to Zurich in the second half of July with a one-day trip up to Amsterdam. On July 26, we're having a lunch with Catherine in Amsterdam. Everyone's invited. It's open to the public. It's a la carte. You can learn more about it on the website. And the end of August, just want to remind everybody, I'm going to be driving to California out at the end of August through Reno and returning to Tennessee in the first week of October through Texas. So I'll be road tripping in the western side of the United States. Our theme tonight is the power of shunning. I want to talk about the power of shunning, but first I want to talk about why I want to talk about the power of shunning. And that is, we're seeing a really out-of-control lawlessness that we've been watching in Washington, the latest in the case of the Clinton email investigation. Lawlessness is not something that's new, but this extraordinary breakdown in the effort to create the appearance of lawfulness is quite, it's not completely new, but it's reached a level of blatant that is really a little bit concerning. The FBI announced this week that Hillary Clinton was extremely careless in the management of her email, but were not recommending prosecution because they didn't see intent to break the law. The logic was twisted inside and out like a pretzel. I sometimes call this kind of stuff pretzel talk. FBI head James Comey said that there was no intent to break the law. First of all, intent is not the standard. So if you look at the standards for basically playing fast and furious and being extremely careless with classified email, there doesn't have to be an intent for something to break the law. From what I can see, Clinton clearly broke the law. Second of all, installing a private server to use with classified email consistently when you're raising money from the same people and countries or having your husband charge them speaking fees that certainly bring money and increase your personal net worth when state is handling that, you know, those same people and countries underscores intent that is beyond any shadow of a doubt. So clearly there was absolutely intent. So Comey's explanation was bizarre. I'm not saying that I expected the FBI to prosecute, but the problem was that Comey's announcement followed a bizarre series of events in which one ex-UN official who was about to testify against Clinton appeared assassinated with his own workout equipment. And then to top it off, and it wouldn't surprise me if other people had been assassinated in this process. We certainly know hacker, the Romanian hacker who had hacked into Clinton's emails is now under lock and key in an Alexandria, Virginia jail. And he's clearly been muzzled. So God knows how many people have been harmed or hurt in this. Attorney General Loretta Lynn met in secret with Bill Clinton. Now an ABC reporter got a tip, so the meeting became not secret. But for the Attorney General to basically brief Bill Clinton prior to Hillary Clinton meeting with the FBI for the final interview on the email aspect of the investigation, whether there's an ongoing investigation by the Clinton Foundation about the Clinton Foundation is not clear. Anyway, for those of you who haven't been to law school or never wanted to become an expert at civil and criminal procedure, for a sitting attorney general to meet with the disbarred husband of a target of a criminal investigation is so over the top, it's so outrageous that it's very difficult for me to describe words to describe to someone who's not a lawyer how bad this is. It's so outrageous it prompted me to write a letter to the White House on July 1st before Clinton's interview with the FBI, and you can read the letter up on the website. Let me read it to you. July 1st, 2016, Dear President Obama, the Attorney General of the United States just met in private with the target and husband of a target of an FBI criminal investigation. She should be fired. If there is no law, we have no currency, no country. Best regards, Catherine Austin Fitz. And then there's a series of links about the different sort of events leading up to this. Frankly, the upshot was that Attorney General Lynch apologized for doing it, which is even more outrageous, given that I believe she probably committed one or more felonies in the process. And the idea that you can just apologize and then it's okay. Imagine if everybody caught in a drug deal just said, well, you know, we're really sorry. And that's that. Now, let me tell you what I think is really going on. The Bilderbergers in 2008, when it was basically decided that Obama would be allowed to win the Democratic nomination, become the president as opposed to Clinton. I think basically Clinton was told if she supported this effort, they knew that Clinton could never get the bailouts done. And if you're trying to steal $27 trillion, you know, Obama was critical to that effort. So I think what they said to Hillary Clinton was, look, if you will simply support and make it possible for Obama to do what we want him to do, then, you know, you'll be next in line and we'll let you win, you know, 8 years hence, 2016, it will be your turn. And she was given the State Department, just as James Baker said in Financial Times 2 weeks ago. She was just at the State Department to run for president. And one of the things she did at the State Department working with Bill was basically to racketeer on a global scale. But if you look at who got that money, you know, let's say the Clintons put a couple hundred millions in their pocket and the pockets of their friends. I think, particularly given what happened in Haiti, they generated, I suspect, billions for the syndicate, including many, many members of the Bilderbergers. So they were basically harvesting a turf for the syndicate, and their payback was they got a couple hundred millions and the chance to lock up the presidency using essentially that racketeering, that flow of cash flow. And that was the understanding. And the Bilderbergers just met and I believe confirmed their commitment to Clinton as the Democratic nominee. I think it's too early to say that they've committed to the presidency because everybody has to squeeze more deals and promises from both sides. But that left it to the Clintons and the president to implement that decision. And I think it is clearly we saw a very forceful deep state move to rig the vote in California. I suspect that Sanders probably won that vote, but there were a lot of machinations to make sure it looked like Clinton. But we've seen witnesses killed. As I said, we've seen witnesses jailed and muzzled. We see the attorney general go off and brief Bill Clinton. I suspect that conversation was to give him the information he needed to know to help Hillary basically know how to handle the interview and skate the traps, so that essentially Comey wasn't put in the position of the FBI agents who interviewed her, about five or six apparently, having to come forward, having, you know, nailed her. So they didn't want to be in a position of having to reverse a recommendation from the line management that she be indicted. Anyway, so earlier this week, I was tempted to have as our theme, Lynch finds her inner you-know-what trash. We have an expression here in the South about trash. Anyway, so I think Lynch was basically trying to engineer it so that Clinton could skate the interview and that would keep Comey from basically having to overturn, or Lynch having to overturn. And then after Comey announces his decision, the New York Times publishes a story that the Clintons are planning on keeping Lynch on. Talk about the New York Times also finding their inner trash. It was pretty disgusting. And basically the for sale sign on the Department of Justice was basically, you know, it was like a neon sign for everybody to see. It was quite frightening. Following the FBI announcement, talking about the hero of the day, Speaker Paul Ryan called for Hillary Clinton to be denied access to classified information during the course of the presidential campaign because of what the FBI determined, i.e. that she was reckless in handling classified information via email. It was a brilliant move on the part of Paul Ryan, because what it's saying is, look, Clinton uses classified information to raise money and help Bill make large speaking fees and raise money for the foundation. So clearly, if she can't be trusted handling classified information, we shouldn't be giving it to her during the election. And typically, nominees do have access to classified information to brief them during the campaign. But it's an absolutely brilliant move, because, in fact, if you can shut her off from classified information during the campaign, it could really clip her wings. There were House hearings following with Comey, trying to learn more about what the FBI found during the investigation. And now the House is saying they want the FBI to investigate whether Clinton lied to Congress on the emails. All they need to do is find Clinton saying or indicating a few different things between what they told Congress and what they told the FBI. So any imperfections in the process can lead to an obstruction of justice charge. So I suspect that this is far from over. If you look at what the Republicans are trying to do, they know they have to protect the Senate and the House in the campaign. And the way to do that is to destroy Clinton and paint her as a liar and get her disapproval rating from where it is now at about 57% up to 80%. If you look at all the lies she's told in connection with both the emails and the Clinton Foundation and the racketeering, I think this is going to be pretty easy to do. It's just going to be trench warfare. You have to keep banging the drums and banging the drums, and it will help the Republicans protect their seats. Okay, so what does all this have to do with shunning? The Clintons have been allowed to engage in significant criminality for decades because it was fashionable. It was okay to vote for them. People wanted to be associated with them. I cannot tell you how many people I know who are planning on voting for Clinton or feel that this level of criminality is acceptable. They have absolutely no empathy for the people who've been harmed or assassinated, which at this point, you know, if you include what the Clintons did on prisons or in the millions and millions of innocent Americans, it's shocking how many people have been hurt and harmed. Shunning is historically very powerful politically. It has a powerful influence on both voters. It has a powerful influence on the Bilderbergers. If everybody woke up tomorrow and said, you know, we're just shunning these people, we'll have nothing to do with them, we won't talk to them, we won't vote for them, we won't work for them, we don't care how much money they have, we just will stop declaring them the winners. We don't care if they're the winners, we want nothing to do with them. I cannot tell you the Bilderbergers would drop them in a second. If they became a joke, if we laughed at them, if we told funny jokes about them. But this is going to have to, this is all going to continue until we start putting our time, intention, and our money behind ethical, competent leaders in our lives, in our local areas. We've got to stop backing people who give us money or who we think are going to win because they're good at criminality. In my opinion, we're watching flagrant multiple felonies openly by the Department of Justice, the White House, and the Clintons. I mean, this is really mob style. And, you know, I'm not trying to point fingers at just the Clintons. They're in the hot seat now. The Bushes oftentimes were just as bad, although they were a lot more careful about appearances, as certainly George H.W. Bush was. Here's the challenge. If you look at what people like Obama and the Clintons are dealing with, they're dealing with two systems that have two different sets of cash flows and laws, and the more politically powerful system is supposed to be a complete secret, and it's becoming more and more difficult to navigate between the two. And in fact, the more powerful is coming out of the closet. Let's not even talk about the bailouts or $40 trillion missing. I got an email, which I haven't had time to verify, but I think the numbers are approximately correct. It was describing the mass shootings under different presidents. The highest before Obama was Clinton with 23 mass shootings. Under Bush Jr., I think that number dropped a little. If we count 9/11, of course, we could get it way back up. But then under Obama, there have been 162 mass shootings, not to mention another one in Dallas today. Just to take a note on Dallas, we saw four or five Dallas police killed during a a protest about police killing innocent black men recently in LA. I'm sorry, in Louisiana and Minnesota. It looks to me like the Dallas shooting was a professional hit. I think it's part of the effort to get gun control, but it may also have been designed to distract from people really watching what's going on in Washington. Remember, terrorism is the one thing that can cause the population to support and want government. So every time government's polls and dip below, you know, the flat line, whoops, more terrorism, and suddenly we have more support for government. The question that everybody's asking, why should I obey the law? Let's discern. Let's obey the law with respect to the people who respect us and our rights. And wherever practicable, let's shun, dump, reject, and pull the rug out from under the people who don't. So this is not a zero or one, should you obey the law. It's the zero for some and one for others. So please learn how to shun. It has immense power to shift the entire situation. And it's time to really share a deep physical repulsion to criminality. Criminality is not fashionable. It is destroying our culture and the lives and productivity of many fine people. So get it out of your time, your attention, and your money. Who's your sheriff? Start caring about that and stop caring about the presidential election, even though I'm talking about it. Money in markets. The most unbelievable story subsequent to Brexit is up on the website. There are two links in top picks. The president of the EU, Juncker, stood up in the EU and said that Brexit had upset leaders on other planets. Literally, leaders on other planets. They dropped it ultimately from the transcript. It's still in the video. And then tried to explain it away by that he meant to say other planetary leaders. But the question is secrecy reaching the point where it's making governance impossible? I would say yes. So Juncker's a pretty sensible, cool guy. So whatever's up, it's a very interesting slip of the tongue that he made, and I doubt it was an accident. But it makes you wonder what is really going on. Brexit. I have a very long and serious conversation about Brexit with Dr. Joseph Farrell in today's first part of news, trends, and stories from our second quarter wrap-up. But I wanted to underscore a few things because several things have happened since the vote on Brexit last week. Tony Blair has now had to answer. There's a report, there's been a study underway for many, many years on Britain's involvement in the Iraq War. And the report came out highly critical of Tony Blair, who's getting raked over the coals. He was raked over the coals in April about his personal fortune. I suspect that's going to come up again. And he's, you know, it's dots are going to be connected between his support of Bush and the war in Iraq and how much money he's made both himself and his not-for-profit foundation. But the question is, what is going on? Why is Britain breaking from the EU? And why is Britain making such a big deal about excoriating Tony Blair for supporting the United States over the Iraq war? Well, we've got a big meeting with NATO coming up. It's going to be Cameron's first sort of international do after the Brexit vote. Britain is moving 4,000 troops into Estonia and Poland. Putin has disappeared. Nobody knows where he's been for a couple of days. He's canceled a whole bunch of things on his calendar. And I suspect what one of the things we're seeing is Britain wants to break free of the U.S. unipolar world vision and wants to be able to navigate efforts by the U.S. They're worried to start a war with Russia. I think Britain wants to, you know, one of the things about this Tony Blair situation is I can easily see the next prime minister saying, well, you know, we just have to wait till this Tony Blair thing dies down. There's no way I can build popular support to support the United States in a war of any kind. Whatever's going on, I think Britain wants to badly break free of the unipolar vision And breaking out of the EU will help them do that. But I think their big problem is not Germany and France. I bet it's probably the US. As I've said before, I really believe the Brits made a deal with the Chinese during the Xi Jinping's visit, you know, including the big state meeting dinner with the Queen, again, arguably the wealthiest woman in the world. And China has now indicated this week that the chances of a trade deal with Britain is very good. So again, I think this is Britain taking the Commonwealth and moving to a much more multipolar world with a lot more space in between them and the United States. And it really raises the question once again, what in the world is creating the extraordinary hubris of the United States? Hubris enough that they would want to, that the Brits would want to move away and put space between us. We talk, Dr. Joseph Farrell and I talk a lot about that tonight in the news, trends, and stories, because clearly Brexit is the most momentous action of the first half of the year, and arguably could turn out to be the most important one of the year. But I keep wondering, given Juncker's statement, does the U.S. have an off-planet alliance? Do they have the weaponry, you know, the lead weaponry on dealing with whatever's going on off-planet, or is it just complete ignorance? Who knows? There is, up on the website also this week, is the second in a series of what I intend to be 5 or 6 book reviews by Jason Wirth, looking into the topic of the rise of robots and artificial intelligence technology and what it's going to do to employment. This review is of Martin Ford's new book, Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of the Jobless Future. This is a topic that I very much want to delve into in depth, and I was falling behind. I was doing a great job of ordering the books, but not doing a good job of reading them all, given how busy the markets have kept me. And so luckily, Jason has agreed to do this for us. And I think it's a very important exercise, and he distills some great books down to the essence. So take a look. I recommend it to you. I will tell you, behind the scenes, I think the establishment is much more concerned about technology and how to manage the impact of robotics and artificial intelligence than you might think from sort of watching them. Okay, let's look at the market review. U.S. dollar now down 2.4% for the year. Clearly, Brexit gave a little bit of support, but if you want to know what Brexit really supported, the long Treasury ETF is now up almost 20% for the year. It's unbelievable. If you told me that would happen, I would bet you $1,000 it couldn't be up 20% by June 30, but there it is. The intermediate is up 8.5%, you know, 5 to 7 year ETF, Treasury ETF. Bond aggregate up 6%, and who can believe it? Also unbelievable to me. Junk 8.36%. That's after being down 15% in February, so quite a swing. Equities, the S&P now up 3.8, so the U.S. market is holding much better than Europe. Europe down about 7.5%. Bank shares in real trouble, particularly European bank shares. We're in for a European bank crisis this summer. And it started with Italy. You can see it in the headlines. Home builders are still flat for the year. The Clinton strategy and the Democratic strategy of everybody buying a new home and moving up, as you saw in the first presidential, or the announcement of a race for presidency by Hillary Clinton, you saw sort of the push of home and home builders. It looked like a Fannie Mae ad, but the home builders are struggling with the rest of the economy. Germany now down almost 10% for the year. Developed markets down 5.5%. China large caps down 5%. The small caps down almost 10%. The emerging markets now up 5.73% despite China. And that's down from about 8 or 9% only a week or two ago. The commodities index up 5%. Commodities are rallying because essentially we've got a devaluation race going on globally. Gold and precious metals continue to soar. Gold now up 28% for the year. And silver now number one top commodity spot, up 42%. Unbelievable. I keep saying this. I'm going to say it again. Beware the pump and dump. Please, if you're, you know, don't worry about your core position. Your core position is fine. But for any investment position, please use stops when it comes to gold and silver, because while a lot of the precious metals folks thinks that we're, you know, that the long-term bull is ascended and it's up from here, I still think that we may not have the bottom. We may, but we may not. Now, we crossed the 1340 line, which has been my line for quite a while, and I'm waiting to see if we stay across it on Friday, which will be significant if it holds the 1340 line, and then it's time to reconsider the investment positions. And we're going to take a serious look at the precious metals when we do the financial market roundup in the third week of July, which I'm going to combine with Rambus. And I think looking at what Rambus is saying is important. Oil now back down 6% for the year. It's basically back in the doghouse. Part of it is with a global slowdown. The fundamentals behind oil are not good. So as I said, keep an eye out for tensions in Europe for a banking crisis, and keep an eye on the situation in Russia. Okay, our hero this week is Helen Chapman, who is the lead Madoff attorney. And Helen invited me to New York last weekend, a ticket to see Hamilton, which was remarkable. There's a theater review up on the website. And then the following evening, a ticket to see Sleeping Beauty at the Met. Now, when I lived in New York, I was constantly at the Met and constantly on Broadway. So it was kind of like old home week. Hamilton was particularly endearing for me because I named my company after Alexander Hamilton. And I have to tell you, this production is as remarkable as everybody says it is. You will notice that a lot of politicians who are making it their business to destroy the Constitution are constantly promoting Hamilton and getting their picture taken. Don't let that destroy it for you. It really is marvelous, although I would appreciate it if the Hamilton cast would stop making the Constitution destroyers fashionable. And, you know, it's kind of, their naivete is kind of shocking and a bit baffling, but there it is. I'm going to be seeing Puccini's Turandot, which is my favorite opera, in Lake Constance when I'm in Germany. So I'm really looking forward to that in a couple of weeks, and you'll read more about that on the blog. I must say the runner-up hero this week is Paul Ryan, first of all, because the way he handled the Clinton situation was so deft. I mean, it was very Hamiltonian-like, very Alexander Hamilton. But particularly while everybody's running around trying to be entertainment or get headlines and attention, Ryan has kept his head down, focusing on the nuts and bolts, working very hard on a tax reform package and a healthcare reform. And as he looks at the budget, doing the hard work that needs to be done to get the policies reconfigured to deal with the real budget situation. And that's what we need. So kudos for him. That doesn't mean I agree with everything in those packages, but he's attending to the nuts and bolts, which is exactly what Alexander Hamilton would have done. Okay, ask Catherine. First of all, thank you for the great links. You keep sending these things that are amazing. You know, it's just you look at them and you just can't believe that things are this crazy. One link included from Zero Hedge on the police call to an elementary school after a third grader made a racist comment about brownies. Can you imagine in a third grade class? Okay, ask Catherine a couple questions. One long, so I'm going to read it fast. Dear Catherine, if Trump wins, one, there will be a high level of retirement among members of Congress. This may occur to a lesser extent with a Clinton win, two, followed by an influx of fresh blood in Congress who are not devoted to the establishment paradigm and are united for bringing our government back into the control of the people. Three, the trend to disbelieve and overthrow establishment MIMS and power structures will make a leap in momentum. Brexit is an expansion of consciousness and a very loud no to our sorry state of mankind. Brexit is the first announcement of the arrival of the shift in mankind's concepts. Now, Mr. Global is about to make a serious mistake. He's going to punish Britain and attempt to intimidate the nations considering exit the EU. The punishment will become too public for Mr. Global to suppress and will add to the anger of the people and those leaders who do have integrity in their determination to rid themselves of the tyranny of the globalists and their agenda of the new world. What may push us completely out of the old and into the new, one black swan event may well shock all of humanity out of the system established by Mr. Global. All of our wonderful technologies will become useless overnight. I'm assuming he's describing an EMP event, teaching us that we've gone too far down the road of turning our lives over to science in the service of corporations and big money. Survivors will have the opportunity to restart civilization. There will be a war between the AI elites and the people. We've been prepared for this with many movies. Question, will we receive assistance from friendly aliens, or will we have to fight the unfriendly aliens, or both? And what role will be played by the White Hats, both in the space agency military on Earth and by the globalist space power resisting them? So here's the thing. I disagree with most of the interpretation of the events that you've proposed. So I can't speak to any of that. What you do say, though, is preparing for the above seems obvious. One, ensuring food and water supply on a per-family basis. Two, establishing a system of trade and currency that is viable on local scale. Three, organizing small units of community to provide needed skills for survival's pockets of enduring human beings. On all of that, I think that's great preparation for a multitude of scenarios that could happen. I would just say that it's important to prepare and do what you can do with trustworthy people. Particularly, it's important to ensure that you have really healthy, fresh food and clean water. So I think those kind of preparations are good to do. Dear Catherine, I listen to Richard Dolan and have been wondering about the plight of Greece. He talks about the toxic loans they have been crippled with and have been wondering whether the lenders might be guilty of that same type of deception that has led to all the PPI claims. Perhaps some clever lawyers could find a way of making these toxic loans illegal in hindsight and cause them to have them reimbursed with compensation. Absolutely. I think there's a case for fraudulent inducement in most of these situations, and I'm still waiting to figure out how to organize a group of lawyers who will have the courage and fearlessness to carry that day. One of the things that would help them do that is the more people who will pull their money out of the big banks and put their money in the honest and smaller banks or credit unions. If we could really get a major shift of money going, I think that would really give energy and support to the attorneys to do that. Okay, our interview today is the first of four parts. We're going to roll out the second quarter wrap-up all through the month of July. The first, tonight we're doing News Trends and Stories Part 1, and then next week, News Trends and Stories Part 2. I always chew through the News Trends and Stories with Dr. Farrell. However, the more we chew through and the more explosive events become, the longer it gets. So I said, okay, let's do economy and financial markets and geopolitics in part one, and then we'll do the big questions and science and technology in part two, which is next week. Clearly, Brexit is the big story of the second quarter, and we spend a lot of time tonight talking about Brexit. Again, next week is going to be part two of News Trends and Stories. The following week, I'm going to do Financial Market Roundup, but I'm going to combine that with Rambus's Blockbuster Chartology. So I'll be using our web presentation of financial market charts, but also drawing on Rambus. I think it would be a lot easier for you if I integrate those two things and do them together. We have a great web presentation. Our wonderful blogmaster has been working on it all week. And News Trends and Stories is one of the pages. And we list the trends and within them the top links. We have an editor who just does top picks, Texan Brad Edens. And he has really outdone himself in helping me chew through all the stories we had in the second quarter, and reaching out to a lot of allies and subscribers, and finally sitting down with Dr. Farrell. It's been quite an effort to collect up because, as I said, events are explosive. It's very important to me that with a minimum amount of time, you can read these trends and these links, and with a minimum investment time, you will be as well educated as anybody on the planet. So our goal is to help you cut through the noise and really see what's going on in a very compelling and interesting way. Finally, the big theme for the second quarter wrap-up is going to be productivity, prosperity, and the Popsicle Index. We've been getting a lot of business and political leaders indicating real concern about productivity, as they should be. Their ideas about what the problems are very different than mine. And, of course, ideas about solutions almost opposite. So I want to have a clear, coherent conversation about what's causing productivity growth to fall, how we could turn that around, how we create conditions of prosperities. And of course, as you know, I think it's very important to align financial interests with the well-being of people and living things and places, which gets you back to my concept of the Popsicle Index. How do we all feel safe in our homes and in our place? So we're going to post a discussion about prosperity, and that will be in the last week of July. So, many people have said to me, but wait a minute, it's completely, if you look at everything that's going on and what these guys are doing, it's completely hopeless. I never accept that. I think it's very important if we're going to turn things around. We have to have a vision of the fact that in fact, everything on the planet can work. There is no economic reason for scarcity on this planet. Now, there may be a geophysical reason I don't know, or some other reason I don't know, but there's certainly no economic reason for scarcity. So, but I think we have to have a serious conversation about what the establishment thinks and then what I think and see if we can't sort some of that out. So anyway, so that will be in the last week of July. So with that, in closing, again, next week, second quarter wrap-up, News Trends and Stories, Part 2. The third week, Blockbuster Chartology with Rambus combined with our second quarter equity overview, using the charts from the financial market roundup. So before those two, please feel free to dive into the web presentation. The link is in the Solari Report commentary on the website for this week. And then I'll do the second quarter equity overview. I'll be talking to you from Germany. And then I'll do the Productivity, Prosperity, and Popsicle Index from Zurich when I'm there. So until July 14th, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.